This is CISO to CISO, a live podcast focusing on information security, leadership, innovation, and more. Brought to you by Altitude Networks, data security for the cloud. Welcome, everyone, to another edition of the CISO to CISO webcast. Super excited to have everyone here today. My name is Michael Coates, and this podcast webcast is being brought to you by Altitude Networks. We are tackling data security and cloud collaboration platforms like G Suite, Office 365. So if you've ever shared a document to the wrong person, had somebody offboard and still have access to your data in the cloud, or wonder exactly how you protect all that information, check us out. That's our sweet spot. Super excited today to have Keith McCartney with us, the VP of Security and IT at DNA Nexus. Keith, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
So, so many exciting things to talk about here. The life of somebody in security is never boring. That's for sure.
Say that again, right?
Yeah. And really, really pumped here to hear, you know, some of your stories and what you're working on. So tell us a little bit about how you got to the role as a security leader. You know, what I found is everybody's path is different. And you're heading up security and IT at a pretty exciting company. How did you end up there?
Yeah, I love telling the story. It's also, I love hearing the stories from others because as you mentioned, it's always different for folks. I think recently we've had more educational programs and certification programs focus on security, but a decade ago or even more, there really wasn't an educational program. You couldn't go to school to be get a master's in cybersecurity or focus on information security. So I entered the field in kind of a roundabout way. I was actually an electrical engineer at University of Florida, and I ended up doing some work for Siemens and for the local power company. And through that work, I kind of took more of an IT consulting route and ended up at Accenture. When I got to Accenture straight out of school, I think there must have been some resume scanner that scanned my resume to figure out what group are you going to be in. And because of my work at the power company, I had done some business continuity and disaster recovery work. Hurricanes, obviously, a very, very influential force in Florida. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of the reliability engineering work that I was doing was specifically to help us recover service faster for our customers. And so the resume scanning logic that they had at the time meant that that's a security function. So I ended up in the security group. Didn't know a lot about it, but had a great group of folks who helped me learn, started on policy and risk assessments and got through to some technical system implementation, did some identity access management work. And the rest, I guess, is history, as you say.
Yeah. So it sounds like if we're going to make an analogy or reference to a movie, it sounds like the sorting hat, the Harry Potter sorting hat resulted in you going into cybersecurity.
That's a good analogy. I think very good analogy, actually. Not thought of that one. The thing I like to focus on is what keeps me in cybersecurity as well. And as you mentioned, I'm leading up the IT team now at DNA Nexus in addition to security. And these are two things that I think are interesting challenges and are becoming more and more closely linked to each other. Used to be that they were kind of opposing forces in some camps, but I really like the combination of having the responsibility for user enablement as well as responsibility for security and control. And I think probably the last 7 or 8 years, I think folks on the security side have been realizing that this is critical. If we're not focused on user enablement, we're going to lose, right? Because the users are going to go around the controls. They're innovative and they're going to find a solution. But being able to tie into IT and really realize and have the team realize that our success is the user's success. Mm-hmm. And as we design systems, it needs to work in a way that makes it easy for people to be secure, easy for people to be compliant, easy for people to be safe, as well as do their work, right? That's why they're there.
Yep. Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I think that's going to be an interesting thing to unpack, this tie between security and IT. So I'm really excited about exploring that. And then another piece that is also often overlooked, I think because of the technical nature of our field, is that so much of what we need to do is actually not technical. It's about relationships.
Yeah.
And it's almost shocking at first, because I took a similar path to you in security. going and doing a broad spectrum of different things from policy review to technical controls reviews to actual hacking. And it gave an appreciation of all these different parts, the technology, the policy. But for me, at least, what I noticed was the more you progress in the field, the more the human part becomes the big driver. Now, you're probably seeing that even more so in a smaller company where that human interaction or bumping into each other is a big deal. Not that it doesn't change, but how are you managing that element of relationships and humans in a small org to get things done?
That's a great great question. And I to be honest with you, I love being in a small org. I think I've been, I think my first company was about 185,000 people when I was there. Second was it was about 120,000. And then it went to 3,600, which in relative size is still a lot. It went to about a 450 person org and now at about 150 person org. The thing that is different for me is, you know, at the 120,000 person org, you're really conscious of creating demand, right? Because it can very quickly outstrip your capacity to service that demand. That concern goes away a little bit as you get to small and smaller orgs, right? Where you can actually have a one-on-one relationship with everybody in the company, which I love. You can develop a relationship and you can be involved in the majority, or if not all, the design decisions and the decisions related to technology. Whereas you've got to figure out other methods to scale at the large orgs. And you can do that through growing your team. You can do that through providing guidance. But I think it becomes much more, as you mentioned, relationship driven. And you get to focus a little bit more on kind of what people's business objectives are. What are they trying to achieve? And then how can you help them get to that point? Without being the department of no that I think at the larger companies, folks are typically forced into just because of that scale problem.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you mentioned a really interesting point there of how to help them be successful. I didn't hear you say how to shove security down their throat. How have you found that's worked out with shifting that mindset, if I can kind of make some leaps there, of helping them be successful versus advancing your agenda per se?
Yeah, I think the thing to realize is that there's steps forward and there's steps back, right? And those steps back can be because of an experience that person has had in the past with your predecessor or a security person or a compliance person at another organization. And so I think empathy is a really important part to understand. It's try to understand where somebody's coming from, right? The default assumption, I like to say, I had a boss who taught me, assume positive intent, right? So we don't come into the meeting, come into the room, come into the project with the assumption that anybody's trying to do things in the wrong way or do things in a way that's going to create risk for the company. But they do have other constraints that we may not be aware of. And I think it's important to understand those and have a conversation with them and understand which of those are flexible, which of those can we work on and help them, and then which of the ones are inflexible that we just have to deal with and maybe go down a risk acceptance path or risk mitigation path to make sure that the business can be successful without taking too long to get to market or without increasing our operational costs or our development costs beyond what we can support. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think that other constraints element is really key because sometimes as a security person, you'll wonder like, why are they pushing back? Why won't they just do this? And maybe they even want to do it, but the other constraint they have is priorities and time. Like if their boss or their chain or their OKRs or whatever are saying this thing has to be done by this date, and you're not part of that thing, you can see how it's not you, it's not security, it's like the facts on the table.
And I love the OKR point, because at that point, it goes in that bucket of inflexible constraints, right? I think your opportunity to influence that is when those OKRs are being set. And so if you're not in the room during that conversation, and realistically, you won't be in the room all the time, but if you can set a vision for the organization, if you can socialize that with the right folks, at least at least your agenda and where you want the organization to go and where your leadership, where your CEO and your board are directing the organization on risk tolerance, that's going to be considered when we set these mm-hmm. objectives at the org level. That makes mm-hmm. it a lot easier. I think it's always difficult the first year or two when you come into a CISO role or a VP of security role, and those OKRs are already set. And so you've got to gradually change the pace of the organization over time. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
that's a delicate skill set. And I think one of the metrics that we think about a lot is in the security world, I think this is changing, but a couple of years ago, I used to look at the longevity of security leaders, and it was about 18 months, mm-hmm. right? And so if you're leaving the org after 18 months, you really haven't, and presuming you're okay as a set on an annual basis, you really don't have a lot of time to influence that. So that's one of the things that we need to be thinking about the long game as security professionals and as business partners.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, fully agree. So, each of these webcasts, we like to move around the world because I don't know about you. I'm tired of sitting on Zoom in my home office. So,
and you're hitting a nerve.
Yeah. We got out the corporate jet. We're doing real well as a startup. Got the corporate jet out. We flew you, both of us, out here. Tell us a little bit about where we are in the world and why we picked this location.
Yeah, so we're in Switzerland. We're in Canton Valais in Zermatt, actually. So Zermatt is a town in the valley. We're both looking at different angles of a very picturesque, notable peak called the Matterhorn. We're looking at it from the Swiss side. We have some other pictures from the Italian side, and it kind of just blends into the ridge. So it's funny that you think of this. It kind of is a perception in a way that applies to security as well. As you look at the Matterhorn from the Swiss side, and you have this picturesque peak that kind of reminds you of Toblerone chocolate. You look at it from the Italian side, and it's just another bump in the ridge. And I think security is an interesting parallel to that. Right? Is the beauty is in the eye of the beholder around the around our art. But this is a place that I had an opportunity to live in Switzerland for about 5 years. As part of one of my assignments, and just loved it. But the winters are pretty rough there, and particularly I was in Zurich. You don't get many sunny days in the winter. There's a lot of overcast days. It's in the valley. There's pretty big lake, so it stays cool. And if you want to see sunshine, you've got to go up above the cloud layer, up to the mountains, the 3,000, 4,000 meters. And Zermatt was one of those just places that we love to go. We love the culture, love the food, love the skiing, and love the sunshine.
Well, a parallel or an analogy with the background location security, I think you take the cake. You've set the bar higher for all future guests.
Well there. All right.
So, something you said a little bit earlier that I want to come back to was all about this notion of collaboration with IT, the desire to make people productive, make things work. And if I could infer also making it secure, you have a pretty unique, and maybe not unique, a changing setup with security and IT both reporting to you. And I have seen that happening at more companies.
Yep.
How is that working out for you? Were you apprehensive initially? Has it played out well?
Yeah, I think... I don't know that apprehension was the right word. I was excited about it. I was excited mm-hmm. about the opportunity. I think as security professionals, anyone who's been in the field for a long time, I'm sure has a story to tell you about DevOps and a story to tell you about IT. And most of those stories, unfortunately, are at least in my experience, haven't been positive. I think I've been lucky. I've had some really good relationships with IT. I think part of that's been the focus that I've put on that relationship. But also, I want to thank the partners that I've had in previous roles. But there's some natural conflict there because we're incented in different ways, right? So security is incented to manage the risk and control the risk and make sure that the bad things don't happen. And IT is generally incented on making sure the systems are online and available and make it cheap, right? Don't kill us with the cost of these systems for the value that we get out of them. And so security can tend to add cost, can tend to add complexity, which impacts uptime and availability, and recently tends to introduce a lot of change, which also can impact cost and availability and uptime. So those objectives don't necessarily align, but it's important to focus on the relationship. I think We're starting to see these two functions roll up under the same executive more often. And realistically, in the scenarios where you've had a CISO report to a CIO in past, they're also rolling up to the same executive. It was just that primary background of that executive was an IT operator. Now that I've got both of them in line, I'm starting to reduce the distinction and difference between security and IT. Right. I think giving the security professionals on the team the objective of enablement and the consideration of user experience, as well as change communications, right? If we're doing a security change, the security folks write that, right? It's not the IT folks that are writing that change notice, as well as giving the IT operators the responsibility to make sure that any changes they're making, any new systems that they're introducing are secure. I think it's really making us more efficient. It's making us more streamlined, and we don't have these kind of like multiple steps on the deployment to say, hey, did so-and-so sign off on this, or is so-and-so handling the communications to the users on this? It's really integrated. And I think that gives our people development opportunities, right? That they're becoming, more skilled at end-to-end deployment. And it also allows them to work across boundaries that we had instituted in the past, but I don't know if there was really a reason for it other than just the differing objectives that the organization had given to us. So I think it's a great change. I think we're going to see more of it, but it's not without challenges, right? It introduces some of the same prioritization challenges now within the organization, within the team that, security has always faced, right? We've always faced the cost challenges. We've always faced the considerations of users, although we may not have been held as accountable for those considerations as our IT counterparts were.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that it brings together these two push and pull forces that has to be secure, has to be usable. I wonder how would an organization think about this with that concern of, well, what if the leader just buries one? Like, what if you just buried the security and like it's usable? Who's your counterbalance to that? Or what is the counterbalance in the business as I think about that?
Yeah, that's a good point. I always think of it of well, at some point you're going to have a problem, right?
Yeah.
But that's not the type of counterbalance we want to see in our organizations because that means that something has gone wrong. So I think that there's that piece out there that we want to be accountable for. But I think there's some new relationships that start to evolve between compliance and audit teams, which have always held both sides accountable, legal teams who are a key part to how we communicate that risk to the board and to our investors. And then ultimately, there's the executive team of the company and the board, which are setting the strategy. Which security needs to be a consideration on that roadmap. Mm-hmm. IT and the cost side and the user enablement is something that they're interested in, but it's also very frequently regarded as table stakes, right? The systems just have to work. People just have to be efficient. If there's pain, we're going to focus on that and address it. But I think we're seeing the security conversation rise to the board level to be a frequent feature at the board reporting. And honestly, the board members are becoming more educated and know to ask these questions and are starting to get more experience and more insight at evaluating our responses to their mm-hmm. questions in this area.
Mm-hmm. And I like that notion. Yeah, parts of IT are considered table stakes, but as you move technology platforms, like if you make a move to cloud, to work from home, that's going to impact IT dramatically, but of course security as well. So having those two work hand in hand is great. Yeah. Even for this is the top issue, but guys, we got to get this element solved and we got to solve it in a way that works and is secure.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, very cool. Now, one of the challenges in the security world or the leadership of security is, to your point, like if the average tenure is 18 months, that's a challenge. And some of the reasons that period is so small is burnout. That's something that we're aware of.
Yep.
And I think that gets back to some elements of like your mental space on how you think about this. There's so many things that could go wrong. There's so many things you could be doing. So when you look at all those things, how do you think about when you are done, or how do you know if you've done enough, or how do you wrap your head around thinking about that at all?
Yeah. I think part of it is just part of being successful in this space is realizing that you're never done. And I equate that to, you know, a lot of engineering and scientific endeavors, right? Mm-hmm. We're looking at, and even the concept that's pretty prevalent right now in our SaaS infrastructure is continuous integration, continuous deployment, with proxy for continuous improvement, right? And so we don't think of it as like there's kind of an end of the road where we just stop and we're good, right? I think that supposes that we're not up against a dynamic adversary. Mm-hmm. I think, the reason that we need to do these things is because there's other folks that would like to profit or would like to gain advantage if we were not to do them, right? To use our resources, to use our investment, to use our knowledge, use our intellectual property, to abuse our relationships with our customers for gain that is outside of that agreement or outside of the structure that we've created to offer our service and service our customers. So I think that's the important thing to remember is, you know, you're never really done, but I think an important thing to deal with it is to set interim milestones of like, what are we going to achieve this quarter? What are we going to achieve this year? What do we need to be thinking about? What do we need to be planning for in the next 2 years, 3 years? I think the 5-year plans become really difficult because there's so many unknowns and the rate of change in the space is so quick. You can build a 5-year plan, but it might be a humorous effort looking back on it. But it also underscores the importance of continually evaluating what do we need to be focused on, right? So even with your 1-year plan or your 2-year plan, when you get to that point, it's unlikely that you're going to be doing exactly what you thought you would be doing a year ago. You know, if you are, you're pretty fortunate, you're pretty lucky. But having some type of feedback mechanism, having some type of evaluation of like, what are the threats that my organization is seeing? What are the threats that other folks in the space are seeing, or that our partners are seeing, that our customers are seeing? And so having that open dialogue with those partners, with those customers, and even in sometimes our competitors, right? I think that always makes our business a little bit nervous, but you know, in our space, we're all on the same team, right? We're trying to achieve the same objective, and breaches of even a competitor, I don't think are necessarily to our advantage, right? That just increases the incentive for our space to be targeted. Mm-hmm. But I think I talked a lot there, but I think that to sum it up, I think you've really got to, like, prioritization is critical, and interim goal setting is absolutely critical. And I like the OKR approach, where you kind of define what do I want to change about the organization versus this, like, okay, yeah, we deliver this project, we're good, but really, like, what do we want to change and how are we going to measure that change? Is a good way to think about it.
Yeah, and you touched on like that measurement piece is really interesting in security, and there are extensive discussions on security metrics, and in many ways you can, at the base layers, you could track all sorts of metrics on patch level, password complexity, you could track all sorts of things, but some of it leaves some to be desired. And I like what you're saying about tying metrics like OKRs. And actually understanding, well, what are you fundamentally changing for the company to move forward? I think that's an area we have lots more work to be done in security, and certainly a great place to do some deep thinking about.
Yeah, there's a lot of material that's been written on this. I think there's a lot of ideas right now around how do we measure security and what are effective measures of security. The old joke is like, doesn't really matter how many packets your firewall dropped, like that's not a good measure of security. Yeah. But really tying it back to business objectives and how we're controlling and managing the risk that our space, the technological risk, presents to those business objectives.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and to your point about, you know, speaking to the board, if you've built that strategy that you're sharing with the board, you're right. Telling them how many packets your firewall dropped isn't going to, like, how does this help the strategy? And so suddenly if you step back and don't think about security at all, like, well, what are we trying to achieve? How do we measure achieving that goal? Well, boom, now you have some metrics that people might actually care about.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, very interesting. So, you know, of everything you've seen through your journey, we know that there are plenty more people we need in the security field. On one hand, you could argue there's a security shortage. On the other hand, I'll argue people are bad at hiring. But there's those two things are both probably true. But so we need more people in security. What do you say to the people that want to transition from a security IC and they want to be a leader? They want to run a team. They want to run security for a company. They want to be in your shoes one day. What advice do you give them? Things to avoid, things to make sure to do?
Yeah. I like the two items that you called out is like, okay, shortage of talent and people are bad at hiring. That is a pretty bad scenario that lays out. I think the other thing that I threw out there is as kind of a question is maybe we're not great at developing our people either. So when I think about that transition, my own personal transition from being a security IC to a security manager and security leader, you got to make sure that you've identified who are the people who are going to help you on that journey, right? Who are the people that you can use as mentors? They don't necessarily even need to be security people. It's helpful if a couple of them do have a background in risk and security and have dealt with some of the same challenges that you're dealing with. But don't be afraid to pick up a business person as a mentor as well. Someone who's dealt with operations, someone who's dealt with business development or strategy. I think that's going to be really helpful for you to stay relevant and to understand the challenges that the business faces and how you can help. The other thing that I would say is that third leg that we talked about that maybe we're not so good at is make sure that you're developing the people who are going to fill those IC roles that you're going to need on your team, not just your replacement, but also other people that you're going to add to your team and build a pipeline and make sure that those folks are getting what they need, that they're in a position to help you and to help your business. And I think that there's, you know, always going to be folks that are growing faster than you can build a need for their skill set. And I think it's important as a community that we recognize that and recognize that it's not a bad thing if people leave our organizations to go someplace else for a better opportunity. You know, we always obviously love to retain the talent, but I think more importantly for our people and for our industry is recognizing that talent does move. That's not necessarily a bad thing, and that we all grow stronger as that talent base expands and becomes more diverse.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, to draw together some of the things you said, like if you stay at your role longer than 18 months and you develop a reputation for growing security leaders that end up going on to other amazing things, you're going to have a pipeline of amazing people that are with you at all times. That's the reputation you want to build.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, very cool, Keith. This was amazing. I think I could sit here and talk, you know, for another hour with you until we grab a hot cocoa and hit the slopes here.
Yeah.
but really appreciate the time you've taken. Any final thoughts that we might have missed that you want to make sure to throw out there to anyone else?
Yeah, I think we talked about it a little bit, but just to recap the importance of relationships. You cannot be successful in this role on your own. You cannot be successful in this role in kind of like a authoritarian or dictatorial position, right? People have tried that. It doesn't work, right? It might work in the short term, but in the end, your users find another way. And so the relationships and building trust, not just with your customers, but also with your users to know, to have that reputation as being there to help them, being there to enable them, not being there to trick or trap or stop them, but being there to really make sure that they can get their work done and that they're thinking about security, but you also have their back. I think that's really important. And that leads to success, both in the security space and the IT space, in my experience.
I love it. I like that. The fact that if you're a good person, you try and, you know, put people's success in the business first, that, hey, things might work out. That's the way to go. I like that. Well, very good. Thanks, everyone, for joining us today. And again, thank you so much for your time, Keith. For those of you watching, I hope you enjoyed the webcast. Maybe you're listening to the audio and taking a much needed walk around the block. Don't forget to subscribe to get notified of new events and also subscribe to the podcast to make sure you don't miss any of these wonderful discussions. But again, Keith, thanks so much for joining us. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.